911, what are you reporting?
I got a strange going on out here. Something just killed my dog.
Something killed your dog?
My dog went flying through the air over the tree. I don't know how it did it.
Okay.
Damn it, I'm really confused. All I saw was my dog coming over the fence, and he was dead when she hit the ground. I didn't see any cars. All I saw was my dog coming over the fence.
What are you reporting?
We got someone or something crawling around out here.
Did you see what it was?
There was. It was standing up. I'm out here looking through the window now and I don't see anything. I don't want to go outside. Jesus Christ, you better...
Sheriff?
Dia!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6 foot nine, I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Hey, everybody. This is Les Stroud. Yes, I know. A.K.A. Survivor Man. And you're listening to Brian in Sasquatch Odyssey.
Welcome to this week's episode of Sasquatch Odyssey. Thank you guys so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us for the show. It is Friday. I hope you guys have had a great week. We've got a great guest lined up for you, but as always, I want to start the show by inviting you. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, send me an email. You can get me at brian@sasquatchodyssey.net. Head over to the website, check it out. You can become a member there and help support the show. It is Friday. This is Christmas Eve as I record this for you guys. I hope you guys are having a great holiday season, as I said. I hope Santa Claus comes down the chimney and brings you everything that you ever wanted. But before you get there, I thought you might need a little bit of Bigfoot in your life. So we've got a great guest. We've got Glenn coming to us from Kentucky. If you listen to Storytime, I actually read Glenn's story, well, at least one of his stories, on Storytime not too long ago. And I wanted to have Glenn over to tell his story in his own words because I can only do so much with reading them for you guys. So there's nothing like hearing a story told from the person who actually experienced it. I think that's the most powerful way to get these stories. So we've got Glenn here. He's going to talk a little bit about his story that he experienced outside the cave. Glenn is a musician, and there's music involved in his story. I'll let him tell it in his own words, but he does hang around. This is a fairly short episode. It's only about 30 minutes. I figured it's Christmas, and you guys have a lot going on, but I wanted to put something out there for you if you want to escape and get a little taste of Bigfoot and even a little bit of the paranormal dabbled into this, because at the end of the Bigfoot stuff, Glenn sticks around and shares some of his experiences that he's had with UFOs and extraterrestrials. I'll tell you guys ahead of time before you start sending the emails and making the comments, I do talk a little bit in this episode. I try not to talk much. I like to let the guest tell their stories and not interject all the time, but in order to keep the conversation going, sometimes I get caught up in the conversations because you have to remember, yeah, this is a show and I know it's to entertain you guys, but I'm having conversations with people. That's what the show is all about to me. It's just a conversation between me and Glenn. So you have to remember that I'm talking to Glenn and connecting with him about something that's very traumatic to him. I mentioned it during the interview that he's clearly affected. You can hear the breaking in his voice. And, you know, he shared with me off the air that this was a pretty traumatic thing for him. And it's something that he's still dealing with to this day. So I try to connect with people on that level. And sometimes it requires me to share a little bit of my story, even though you guys have heard it 100 times already. Sometimes it's the first time that person's hearing it because a lot of people who come on the show don't listen to the show. So I apologize that I repeat myself a lot. I appreciate you guys overlooking that, but a lot of it is just me getting caught up in the conversation with people and making that connection and allowing them to be comfortable to share the story. But enough of that. Thank you guys so much. I hope you guys have an amazing Christmas. I will be back next week for you guys, but for now, Merry Christmas. I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to let the music play. You guys sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. All right, folks, I want to welcome our guest. It's Glenn from Kentucky. Welcome to the show, Glenn.
Thanks, Brian. It's good to be here.
Absolutely, man. It's my pleasure. So I know you've got some experiences you want to share with us tonight. So why don't you just take us back to where you were, what you were doing, and what happened to you, man?
Okay. I'll tell you, I'm in Kentucky in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. They call it the Cumberland Plateau and the Dana National Forest. And where I live, it's... The closest creek to me is called Station Camp Creek, which is named that because it's where Daniel Boone used to have his camp when he would come and do long hunts in Kentucky. And it's right off of the Warrior's Path, which is a path that goes, that particular path that goes from Tennessee all the way through Kentucky and passes right along this creek. So I would, all through high school, my friend had this farm close by, and we would go to this cave on this particular creek, and was supposed to be where Daniel Boone had his camp. So we would go there and camp all the time and just growing up. And then I went away and did my traveling music for years, came back and bought a farm in the same area. So in 1995, September, I was taking a break from traveling and was camping at this cave every full moon for probably, I guess, about 9 months. And I would go down with a buddy of mine, and I'm a musician, so I would take a drum down. I had this Napo drum I got out west, and I would carry it down there, and we would build a campfire in the cave and play music and cook food and camp. When we first get there, we would need to get firewood together. So I should say, we didn't know anything about Bigfoot at this time. The only thing I knew about Bigfoot was when I was 9 years old, I saw the legend of Buggy Creek. And that scared me for like the next hunting season with my dad, but I stayed extra close to him. But after that, I just forgot about it. So we go to this cave and every full moon, and it has water that flows into it at one end, and then about a mile through it, it flows out into this big pool, and it's a great place to swim in the summer. And before it flows out of the cave, there's this huge cavern that you can actually walk down in through a hole in the ceiling. You can just walk right down into it, and that's where we would build a fire and camp. So when we first get there, we would get firewood together and throw it down in there. So we didn't have a saw, so we would just take these limbs, kind of dead wood, and smack them across other trees, breaking them in half, smacking them. We do that for like a half hour, crack, 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 until we got enough firewood and throw it down in there. We do this every time. So we get down in there and we're playing music. And this is, like I said, the ninth month we've been down in there. I decide middle of the night, I need to come out of the cave and take a little break. So I walk out of the cave and it's a full moon and all the leaves are down. And, I'm standing there with the moon against my back, just looking out, just amazed how well I can see. You know, it's just beautiful. So I'm just kind of getting lost in that for a few minutes. And then I hear this really, really, and feel this really low growl right behind me. Like, I could feel it in my body just shaking me. So I turned around, and 3 feet from me is this creature. And I look up, the moon's directly behind it. I look up, I'm 6'1". It was at least 8 foot tall. It was blocking out the moon. And you just hear it breathing. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm thinking to myself, well, what is this? Well, I probably shouldn't look at it in the eyes. So I immediately looked down and just stood there. And it was probably only 10 seconds. But it seemed like longer. I was in shock for sure. and I could hear it breathing, and I just thought in my head, I don't know why, I just thought in my head, okay, I'm not a threat to you. I'm just going to walk right back down into the cave by the fire, and I'll be gone. So I just started, the place I needed to get into, the entrance was about 10 steps away to my right, so I just sidestepped. I didn't turn my back on it. I just sidestepped those 10 steps and then walked down into the cave and sat by the fire the rest of the night looking up at the entrance. I didn't sleep. I didn't tell my friend. And the next morning, as soon as it was daylight, we got out of there. And I've never been back to that cave to camp. I've been back since in the daytime, and I actually went back 2 weeks ago with a couple of musician friends. But that was my first encounter there.
I know it was dark. Before we move on,
yeah.
I just want to sort of close out that part of it. I know it was dark and it was very difficult to see. You said this thing was blocking out the moonlight, but did you get any type of detail as far as a description of what this thing looked like, or to the best of your ability, what you saw? Could you sort of paint the picture for the audience what it was that was standing there?
Yeah, it was definitely a Bigfoot. I could see a complete outline of its whole body. And like I said, it was at least 8 foot tall. It had to be 3 feet wide at least. Long hair, just smooth all over its body. You could just see in the moonlight it was smooth hair. I couldn't see its face at all because the moon was right behind it. I'm shaking right now. it scared me. So, I was looking right at its face, and then I thought, you know, well, it's an apex predator. I probably shouldn't do that. So when I looked down, I just kind of looked slowly and saw its whole body, long arms, giant legs. It can see its feet. Yeah, that's basically what I saw. No smell, no other sound other than that first growl and the breathing.
Did you feel like at the time, Glenn, when this thing was growling, did you think it was more of a, because I sort of have a theory on this, right? And I've talked to people that have had encounters where they didn't see anything and they just hear these vocalizations. But at the time that this was going on and this thing growled at you, do you think it was, or did you get the feeling at the time this thing was being aggressive, or do you think it was simply growling to let you know it was there?
I think it was just growling to let me know it was there, because I didn't feel any aggression or any, I didn't feel like it was threatening me at all. I mean, it could have. I was 3 feet away from it. You know, if it wanted to to kill me or hurt me, it could have easily. But no, I just felt like it was probably, we'd been coming there like clockwork, every full moon, playing drums, cooking food, cracking firewood, building fires. You know, I think it was probably just curious and was like, hey, what are you doing in my house or in my backyard kind of thing. Just curious is kind of what I got.
Yeah, and that's really fascinating, man. I know these things, that 3 feet away is extremely close. I think the only person that I've ever interviewed that got closer to one of these things was actually hit by one of them. It picked up threw a log that it was carrying at him. It was a guy up in British Columbia several shows back. But 3 feet is really close, and I think it's way too close for me. I've joked all the time. I've never seen one of these things, and if I ever do, I'd like it to be that, you know, 50, 60, 100 yards away. I'm driving in a car, and this thing's crossing the road. Yeah, 3 feet is really, really close, man. And I know that's not the only time you've had an encounter, so why don't you take us into the next encounter that you had with these things?
Okay. This was in 2013, and it was the same farm that this cave is on. It's probably a 500-acre farm, and the cave is at the bottom of the property, and at the very top of the property, on top of the mountain, is where the house and the barns and the fields and everything are. So me and my buddy, he's a musician too, we built an outdoor stage, and we would have jam sessions on summer nights and camp out. So we'd done this a couple of times, and then this particular night, it was in the summer, I set up my tent in an apple orchard about 100 yards from our stage, and so we played music and had some food and stuff and got ready to turn in. And he went to the house and I went to my tent. And before I fell asleep, I was hearing all these coyotes, which was really unusual because at the time there weren't any coyotes around here that I'd ever heard of until this time. So I heard a whole lot of coyotes howling and in the distance. And then I fell asleep in the tent. And in the middle of the night sometime, I woke up to that same low growl right by my head, right outside the tent. And I knew exactly what it was. And I just laid there paralyzed until I just eventually passed out, I guess, from exhaustion. That's all I heard was the growl. So I think it was the same one, probably just curious again. That was the extent of that, just hearing the growl outside the tent. And that was enough. And I never camped anywhere on that property again at night. I only visit there in the daytime.
Yeah, definitely can't say that I blame you, man. Just the vocalizations in and of themselves, when you hear these things, it's indescribable, really. I mean, the face-to-face encounter is something I can't speak to. Obviously, I've never had that, but I've had experiences where I think I've heard these things in my childhood when I was around 12, and I've shared that on the show a couple of times. And certainly here on our property in North Carolina, I've heard vocalizations that I can't explain. And there's just something about hearing that and you knowing in the back, yeah. I don't know if it's in the back of your mind, if it's that sixth sense, if it's that lizard brain of ours that just says, holy shit, there's something different about this. Stay tuned for more Sasquatch Odyssey. We'll be right back after these messages. Because I've ran into air and I've ran into, you know, I've heard big cats and things like that on our property, but there's nothing like the sound of that low guttural growl from one of these creatures that just scares the shit out of
you. Nothing like it.
Yeah, it's indescribable for anybody who's never had those types of encounters. And, you know, people often call me up or they send me emails and they say, you know, I didn't see anything, but I had these experiences where I heard them. You know, and I don't think it's that interesting, or I don't think people would be interested in the story. And I'm like, no, actually, it's very interesting because that is a very common way to have encounters and experiences with these things. And I think it's very important, just as important as the face-to-face encounters or the roadside crossings or any of the other sightings, in my opinion. These vocalizations are very important. And it's indescribable to those people who haven't experienced hearing one of these things in the flesh to even describe what it is. You know, I've done shows and had people on, and Julie Wrench and David Ellis and other people that have shared audio, even Corky from this past week's show. And the audio just doesn't do it justice. The recordings just don't do it justice unless you hear
it. Oh, no.
And feel it. I mean, I guess that's probably the thing that I'm trying to describe the most as I ramble, is the feeling and feeling it in your chest when you hear these things.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not just hearing it. It's you feel it. It's like infrasound. And being a musician, I know being on stage next to some giant bass amps, and you know, you feel that in your body, those low frequencies, and it's the same type thing. And even just where I live now, in the forest behind me, some people, it's not a national forest, but some people moved some goats in there, a little goat farm. And back in the summer, I heard probably six howls, a few, 5-6 seconds apart. And each time it would happen, the dogs would just go crazy. They were down there guarding the goats. And you know when you hear that, that's no other animal, you know. You just know it in your DNA somehow that that's not a normal creature out there.
Yeah, I definitely agree, man. Like I said, we know what bears sound like. We know what cats sound like. We know what coyotes sound
like. Exactly.
We have all those things on our property here, and we've had those experiences. And it's not every day, you know. We haven't heard a ton of things over the past few months, but, you know, 6 months ago we had the big one that I call right outside the house, you know, 40, 50 yards away. And last winter we used to hear them probably 150 acres or so behind our property. And we would hear them in the distance, you know, maybe half a mile or more away. But there's nothing like that 40 yards away, man. It literally shook our tiny house. And I was like, holy shit, what was that? And there's really nothing else it can be. You know, it's just that often, you know, there's that one-to-one correlation. I didn't see what made that sound, but I can tell you now, I don't know what it could have been other than a person trying to imitate, and that person would have to be really huge, or it was a Sasquatch. You know, I just don't know what else to say. Well, I know that was the only couple of Sasquatch encounters that you've had, but I know you've had other encounters. Is there
actually I have one more.
Okay.
I told you I went back to the cave 2 weeks ago with a couple of my musician friends, and I got there first. They're always late, which I count on, so I knew they were going to be late. But then it got like past late, and I'm like, okay, they're lost. And this has happened before. They've gotten lost before. So I said, okay, they're lost. So I got my Navajo drum out, and I'm sitting outside the cave on the little beach by the pool of water that comes out of it. And I'm sitting there, and I just start playing the drum really loud. I'm thinking, you know, they'll hear me. They'll follow the sound. They're like, oh, yeah, okay, this way. And they'll find me. So I do that for, I don't know, 3 or 4 minutes. And I would play. I would take a little break, play, listen, take a little break. And then on one of those little breaks, I heard from inside, deep inside the cave, a howl, like an Ohio howl. And I was like, oh, he's in the cave. So I just sat there quietly. And like I said, I'm at where the water comes out of the cave, and about a mile through is where the water goes in. So within like 3 minutes, I'm guessing it had come out of the cave where the water comes in, come around the hill, because 3 minutes later from the top of the hill, I heard that same growl again. And then it wasn't long, a minute after that, where I heard my friends coming from the wrong direction. They were lost. They were yelling for me. So, but I had never heard a howl and coming out of that cave, and then that same growl. I was really surprised.
That Ohio howl type sound is what we've heard on the property here about 40, 50 yards away from the house.
And I can't imagine being that close to it.
Yeah, it was weird, man. And I tell you, I've told people that story before, and there was like this bark on the end of the vocalization, which I thought was really odd. And I've heard other people since talk about, you know, I've heard a little bit of a bark on the end. And of course, everybody goes to, well, it was a coyote or it was some sort of canid that made that sound, because canids bark, right? Canines bark. It was either a domesticated dog, it was some sort of a wolf, it was a coyote, whatever. And my go-to is always this: if you're not there to hear it, then I can't describe to you that it would have had to have been a 600-pound coyote making this noise, because...
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's that deep and loud and guttural. You know, it's something I'll never forget. And my friends, they're always hounding me. I've got people in the Bigfoot community that go out and they do research. They do video research. They do audio research. And they're in the woods all the time. And I tell them these stories and they're like, Brian, you do a Bigfoot podcast, man. You've got to start recording this stuff. And I'm like, you know, I don't really have time to set up recorders around my property and review all this audio.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I experienced it myself, and I frankly, I don't need anybody else to hear it.
Exactly. You know, once you hear it, that's enough, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. We just recorded, you know, we finished up doing a television show that'll hopefully be out probably March of next year or so. And that was one of the things that I've alluded to on the show before. The producers asked me when I was going through the process of putting the show together, you know, are you trying to prove to everybody that Bigfoot exists? And I'm like, no, I'm really not. I already think and I believe that they exist, and I don't care what other people think. So I don't have to do the recording. I just know what I heard. I know what I experienced, and that's enough for me. So,
yeah,
you know, it is what it is. There's a lot of people out there doing a ton of research, and I appreciate that. I've had a ton of them on the show, and we'll continue to have those people on the show that go out like Julie Wrench and do the setting up the recordings. And then David Ellis from the Olympic Project, who spends hours upon hours going through what Julie records and picking out those sounds. And I'll certainly continue to have those shows, but I don't need to do that because I know what I heard, and that's enough for me. So,
right.
And I know that.
And there's so many people that like you say, that aren't as busy as you, and that have time to, you know, like I've talked to Cliff and Bobo, those guys, and, you know, they've got more time to be out there doing that kind of a thing. So there's plenty of researchers out there in the field trying to get that evidence. But like you say, once you've experienced it, you don't need anything else, and you don't need to prove it to anybody else. It's just like,
yeah, and that's hard for some people to accept. You know, they're like, well, you should have to prove it, or you should want to prove it. And I'm like, no, I really don't. Because once I believe, and I do believe that they exist, it's all about the documentation of the evidence. And I do that behind a microphone with people like you who've had those experiences, because I think that's one of the most powerful things that we can share is that firsthand knowledge of, hey, I saw this thing, or I heard this, or this happened, or that happened. I think that's one of the most important things that we can do is document those encounters, because every single one of those encounters, whether it be I saw it, or I smelt it, or it was a vocalization, it establishes that pattern of behavior. Because
exactly,
I document these encounters that happen in Kentucky, they happen in North Carolina, they happen in British Columbia, Canada, they happen in England. I've got a show coming up in the next couple of weeks with a lady that I've interviewed from the UK who had an experience when she was a child, and now she's documented tons of encounters in the UK. And, you know, so these things are happening literally around the world, and it's my small contribution to be able to put those stories together in interviews like this and share them with people that have had very similar encounters.
And that's the thing. It's good for people like me who were reluctant to talk about this. You know, I told a couple of family members, close friends, but, you know, you listen to like your podcast and you hear other people's encounters and you recognize behaviors that, oh, okay, well, that's the same thing I heard, or the same thing I saw, or, and it, you know, just, it's good to verify, you know, that these behaviors are common and happening different places to different people. And
yeah, and you know, I've said it on the show before, it's like a drinking game. When I mention I'm a cop, somebody takes a drink. But I spent 16 years in law enforcement, and I've got a pretty good bullshit meter, and I can tell when somebody's bullshitting me and when they're not. And when you're telling your story, it is clear to me that you are affected by what happened to you. I can hear that. I can feel that in your voice. And anybody who's listening to this should be able to feel and understand the same thing that I'm getting from it. It's not a, hey, let me come on your show and let, you know, thousands and thousands of people hear my story because I want to be somehow experience 5 seconds of fame or whatever the case may be. I can tell when people are genuine, and clearly your story is genuine. And I think that's one of the most powerful things that can happen, because there are tons of people out there who have had experiences very similar to yours who will hear this and hopefully understand that other people have experienced the same thing. That's why I started this show. That's why I continue to do this show week after week after week, because I think that's important. Because I know I have talked to people that are vastly affected. Their lives are negatively affected, compounded daily with some of the things that have happened to them after their sightings and sharing them with friends and family members and other people. And that's why I continue to do shows like this, because I think it's really important, A, to document those encounters, and B, to let other people know that there are other people like them out there who have had the same experiences, and you're not crazy. It is a real thing. It is a real experience, and other people have had the same thing.
Yeah, what you're doing is really important, because, you know, it affects you. It affected me. Like I said, just telling you the story, I was reliving it. My whole body was shaking. I just uncontrollably. It affects you. It scares you. I know a lot of people have gotten PTSD from it. Good that you're doing what you're doing, so other just normal people like me can be like, okay, yeah.
Well, ultimately, the show is nothing without people like you that are willing to come forward and share their experiences. So I definitely appreciate that. And I know Bigfoot is not the only experience that you've had in your life. So I have also had other experiences. I've had experiences with paranormal activity in houses that I've lived in, with ghosts. I've seen a UFO in the past when I was about 16. So I know you've had other experiences. Is there other experiences that you can sort of share with us that started earlier on in life that may not be Bigfoot related? Stay tuned for more Sasquatch Odyssey. We'll be right back after these messages.
Yes, actually, ever since I 5 years old was the earliest I remember, I've had experiences with UFOs, extraterrestrials. I would be in my room at night, and they would come in the window and take me, and not just me, but some other kids from the neighborhood. And many nights, I would just kind of come to and be standing like in my front yard with one of my neighbor friends, been like, how did we get here? and then go back inside, and I would tell my parents, and you know, they would say, oh, you're just having a nightmare. But it continued to happen right up into my 30s. And since then, since I moved to this new house 3 years ago, for the past couple of years, there's been UFOs. There's one outside the window right now over the forest. Almost every clear night, one hovers over the forest for 30, 40 minutes, an hour. It'll dart around. There's a helicopter flying around one right now. And then they'll zip off. There's a military base probably, as the crow flies, maybe 30 miles. So I'm not sure what's going on. But I've got tons of video of it. And so quite a few experiences. That's just a little tip of what's going on.
Well, it definitely sounds like we'll have to have you back for just another show on the UFO experiences for sure. Before we close out, I just want to ask this question. Since you've had both experiences, very similar to, frankly, to me, I mean, I certainly have not had a sighting of Bigfoot, but I have seen a UFO, and I do believe I've had experiences where I've at least heard Sasquatch. So when I started this journey and this path, and as I continue down this path, 5 days out of seven, I say it often that I'm in this flesh and blood camp with Bigfoot. So that said, you've had both experiences. You've seen a Sasquatch. You've had this encounter with clearly having these vocalizations out of the cave in the very similar or the same location of having the initial encounter with these things. And you've also had experiences with extraterrestrials. Do you think there is a correlation or a connection between the two, with Bigfoot and aliens?
I never did. I still don't really, except this particular cave, there's been a lot of other activity there, paranormal and extraterrestrial. So I don't know if it's just the spot or, you know, if there's some correlation. It seemed to me like a flesh and blood creature that was breathing and growling and scary. So, I believe they're flesh and blood. I mean, but I don't know.
I guess that's the ultimate question at the end of the day, and that's why I always love conversations like this one, because the more I have these conversations with people who have different encounters and different experiences, the more questions it causes me to ask. And if I'm asking questions to myself and you at the end of the interview, that means that I think there's more to be said, and I think there's more to be discovered. So I certainly, at the end of the day, I don't close that door with there possibly being a connection. Right. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can't really. You got to kind of leave every option open if you want to keep an open mind and try to learn.
Absolutely. And I think that's probably one of the most important things about cryptozoology and ufology and these pursuits of things that we're all seeking the answers to. I think if you start to close those doors and stop asking questions, I think you're already at the end of your rope, and there's really nothing else for you to learn at that point. So, Glenn, I thank you so much, man, for coming on and being open and honest and vulnerable and being able to share your encounters the way you did. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing with us tonight, man. I really do.
Yeah, you're welcome, Brian. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. And I'm just to your point, a second ago. You do. You have to keep an open mind if, you know, if you really want to learn. And what these experiences have done to me, taught me, is I want to know the answers. So I've been a lifelong religious studies and history and physics and just anything that might have an answer. You know, so I've kind of just keep looking for the answers, keep searching, keep learning, keep an open mind. And I think that's the key. And I appreciate your time, Brian, and it's been good talking to you. And keep doing what you're doing, man.
It was definitely my pleasure.
Thank you.
And that's it for tonight's show, folks. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you guys next week.